Sid Fernando joins us. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. You don't miss much.
Well, you know, it flies by your screen. It you know, it's like a it's like a rotogravure. Pittsburgh's nice. I haven't been in ages. My friend Craig Sheckman, his wife, that last time I went there was for their wedding. But that's a long time ago. But the Hill, and it's a great town.
Yeah, it really is. It's a real nice area over there, too. I mean, you know, it's different topography than Brooklyn.
Yes.
So that was kind of nice.
Absolutely. I'd come close. I'd had reasons to be out in Western Pennsylvania on other things, but that was really the only time I ever got to see the city, and there was a little bit of time, you know, between the events and things. And I remember I was staying downtown. I don't remember where, but and I got to kind of poke around, and it, you know, it's a town that really reinvented itself. And
yes, exactly. Yeah, it's really reinvented. It's a really livable city. It's very affordable.
Yes.
And, you know, I was stunned at, I tweeted this, but I mean, I've never seen a place where, anecdotally, of course, but anywhere I went, I did not see anyone without a mask on.
Hmm.
Which was really stunning. You know, I mean, they've got mask orders there, obviously. You can't go into stores or anything. But, I mean, people were walking on the streets with masks on.
When we say reinvented, a lot of that had to do with the universities, too, with University of Pittsburgh and with Carnegie Mellon and everything that they bring to the community. And, you know, the sort of the post-industrial version of Pittsburgh is is really, really lovely, and I'll have to go back. I mean,
it's really not a bad ride. I mean,
It's a schlep.
Hours,
yeah, it's a schlep across that.
It went easy though.
Yeah, that Pennsylvania Turnpike. Well, that helps because the Pennsylvania Turnpike, you're ready to. You know, drive yourself off the road after
you mean all the hills and the curves.
It's just you know, it's one of those states that you don't believe how big it is until you have to drive from Philly to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly.
Or from Jersey, you know, you get there off the Jersey Turnpike, exit 7A, and next thing you know, it's 8 hours later, and you're in Pittsburgh. It's like, holy cow. You do have options. I've come at it. You can come at it across New York and then dive down, or you can even angle up from Maryland. And, you know, there's other ways to, anything you can do to avoid the Pennsylvania Turnpike, I recommend. That's my suggestion. Sid, we got so many things happening at once. And one thing I didn't expect to bring up, because I only saw of his passing an hour ago, a hat trick at the age of 19 in Panama on Monday.
No, Brazil.
Brazil, excuse me, not Panama.
I mean, you know, one of the first Sunday silences to come to this country and stand. And then he started to shovel, and I guess he was just down there permanently now. He's a horse that has a pretty good son. The horse's name is it Dabir? I can never spell it right. Dabir some.
DeBeersum. DeBeersum?
Yeah, DeBeersum, I think.
Yeah, DeBeersum.
How do you spell it?
DeBeersum.
Yeah, that horse.
The European champ.
Yeah, and this horse, DeBeersum, is going to keep this line going because he stands in Europe And, you know, he's the son of Hattrick, French bred. And he's actually done quite well there, and he's now getting better books of marriage. There's a little lull in that period, you know, when you do well and then you got that second, third crop coming, but then he's been bred to full books. He moved locations. So it'll be interesting to see how he does when the other crops start to come. But that's a son that could continue to go on for him.
The Sunday Silence sons, and you know, we haven't talked about this in recent memory, but how many are left out there that that North American breeders have access to?
Well, Adina Springs has the really the only other one that I can think of in Canada right now. He stood in this country as well. Good sire up in Canada. For some reason, I can't. His name escapes me as well. But you remember him.
Well, yeah, because... Silent
name.
Yes, who stood in New York, actually, stood at Joe McMahon's place for a season, and maybe two, and then was sent back up to Adina North. But I've always thought that he's been productive. I mean, he gets runners.
Oh, he's been very productive, yeah. He's actually been very productive. You know, he's one of those stallions that doesn't garner a lot of attention, but he's sired several, you know, graded stakes horses, and altogether he sired 25 black type winners at least through the end of last year, which is pretty good. Silentio.
That's right.
Fanticola, who won the Royal Heroin G2. Summer Sunday graded winner. Silent Poet. So he's still available here. And the line, of course, the Sunday Silence line, the biggest name from that line, of course, is Deep Impact. The great Japanese stallion, Deep Impact to Sunday Silence was like Galileo and Mongeau to Sadler's Wells. Deep Impact died, but the interesting thing is Sunday Silence is another son of Heart's Cry, and Heart's Cry now has a son at stud in Kentucky at Windstar, and that's Yoshida. Dual surface grade one winner.
Right.
And so the line is, available here.
Now, 19 Hattrick, and I was trying to think. Mrs. Weber took one of her mares, more than one. She bred to Hattrick and had some production, actually, and I'm going to have to think of if it was Win Approval that had she had a couple of because that was her, that really was her MO, and I'm trying to think of which mare that he what he produced with something from
Mrs. She had Weber. You said she had a Hattrick Stakes winner.
She took one of the Live Oak, or more than one even. She liked the opportunity to get some Sunday Silence blood in, and I'm boy, I'm drawing a blank on who it was that it wasn't Win Approval, you know, that had all all the nice. She famously has gotten nothing but, other than Ghost Zapper and Za Approval. You know, she got runners from Sultry Song and Miesque Sun and Northern Affleet, and you know, you could put anything to her and she would produce. But there was somebody else that she had a nice.
Hetrick had the Jamaica winner, right? The King David. That was a G1 winner. Was that hers?
No. She there's somebody in recent years. It'll pop in my head anyway. I could look up Live Oak, actually. That's what I'll do. Meanwhile, Sid, let's turn our attention from Hat Trick to the mile and a quarter participants in the Travers, and we also have to at least review a couple of the weekend winners from some of the grade ones. And, you know, here's Improbable. Let's do that first. Improbable's win, you know, following up the Gold Cup with the Whitney and, you know, being seemingly the last, you know, big get for City Zip. Improbable is going to be a very attractive prospect when the time comes. And then there was, you know, Spitestown getting another new grade one winner in Echo Town.
Yeah, I mean, Improbable is a colt, 4-year-old, obviously, like you said, City Zip, one of the last ones. He's owned by Windstar, so he'll go to stud there. But this is a colt that, he hasn't been consistent until this year, but the interesting thing about him, and speaking of stallions that once stood in New York, as City Zip did, before he was moved to Lane's End, City Zip was an incredibly versatile stallion who ended up getting sprinters, milers, mile and quarter horses, turf fillies, the distances, the surfaces, and, sired 10 G1 winners, which Improbable is one. And the interesting thing is, remember that prior to the Whitney, he won the Gold Cup at Santa Anita, mile and a quarter. So this is a horse that, when horses, I think, come to Saratoga, and I've always, had this in my mind, and I'm sure people understand this. It seems like once you start coming, when you come from another track to Saratoga, there's extra stamina that you have to find at Saratoga. You know, it's deeper in the back, on that back stretch, backside, and the fact that this horse was a mile and a quarter winner coming into the race, I think that really helped and actually told you that he has the stamina to run over that track. When we talk about the Travers, I'm kind of doubtful about that same transition for Uncle Chuck. Uncle Chuck will have to go a mile and a quarter on that, on a kind of a deeper surface than he's used to running, and I don't know that that he's going to have that same success that Improbable was able to. The other ones he talked about, the Echo Town, it's a typical Spitestown profile, which I've labeled before the Spitestown effect. Spitestown, throughout his career, had not had a Grade One winner until after June of his three-year-old season, until that schneid was broken last year by Grand Motion with Sharing as a two-year-old on turf. The street still holds, by the way, for dirt, And Charlatan, of course, won the Arkansas Derby, but he's since been disqualified, so he doesn't count anymore. And, you know, the fact that he got hurt speaks to the reasoning for the Spikestown effect. Spikestown matured late. He got hurt early as a 2-year-old and 3-year-old. Didn't get better till he was older. And he has this distinct profile with his best horses. And the stats in these grade one races that I just told you prove that. They need some time, but second half, 3-year-olds and upwards, that's when they really turn it on. In fact, in the Bing Crosby same weekend, he had another horse that just lost the race by a nose. He could have had 2 G1 winners on each coast on the same day if that had happened. The colt I mentioned to you last week, Chuck Fipke owns, also by Spikestown. That's Cheryl Spike. Again, a colt that was given some time because he had a few issues last year. He's coming. He's a graded winner already in 2 starts. Very likely will make his next start in the Derby at 1¼ mile. And again, another example of that Spikestown effect. So I think those that kind of covers both of those horses.
Yeah, that's a big win. And I, you know, I've reached out actually to try to connect with Lee Levinson and, you know, L&N Racing, who has, you know, been kind of knocking on the door. You were hip to looking at Lee a couple of years ago. That was one of their first successes. And I kind of laughed a little bit, I think, on TV on Sunday, that Steve Asmussen has cornered the market on Tulsa attorneys coming to the industry, because the Levinsons are lawyers, and of course Clark Brewster, attorney to the stars from Tulsa. This is their first. It was actually really kind of cute. We were waiting by the winner's circle, and Steve Asmussen was on the phone with Mr. Levinson, and you know, we're only hearing half the conversation. I was standing there with Pat McKenna and Dave Grenig and, you know, all the assembled media waiting for Steve to have a few thoughts about the win. You know, and of course, to that point in the day, it had been a very, you know, a frustrating, the having Midnight Bisou go down, obviously, you know, early in the day, that's kind of a, you know, an ominous tone. So winning, you know, running 1-3, in the Alan Jerkins, I'm sure lifted everybody's spirits around the barn. But I think Mr. Levinson said to him, "Can you make sure to save the saddle cloth?" And I, because Steve said, "No problem, sir. We'll be sure to send the saddle cloth." I thought that was really funny. I mean, he just won himself, one of only 2 or 3 grade one sprints for 3-year-olds, and you know, probably made this, you know, Echo Town a stallion long term. But he send me that saddle cloth. Forget the trophy.
Yeah,
it was great. There's going to be obviously a big grade one opportunity. Let's turn to the Travers Fields and Sid. Looking at this group, I've kind of thought all week to myself, you know, the Derby. We talk for months and months about horses going 1¼ miles, and there's going to be probably a field of 8 when they draw in the next half hour, and there's been very little conversation about this group going 10 furlongs. Let's get some thoughts going through these pedigrees.
Well, you know, I think the distance is more significant when it was in the spring and May rather than in September. I think it gets lessened in the importance of pedigree as we get to September now, because of the way the Derby is this year and the way the Travers now is at this point Ordinarily, horses would have already run a mile and a quarter in the Derby. You get to August Travers, and, you know, you get your Derby horses and new horses coming in. But by this time, there's enough track record, too, and there's a feeling. Having said that, you get, you know, Uncle Chuck, for example, is a very lightly raced horse, making only his third start in this race, coming off a win in the, what was that race?
Los Al Derby.
You know, that's a fast track. I think that this is a horse. You got the Uncle Mo is just an outstanding stallion. Uncle Mo has already had a Derby winner from his first crop, and I'll preface it by saying I didn't think Nyquist could stay because the female family had produced sprinters from horses like AP Indy in that family. And, you know, you think to yourself, the females in this family are producing extremely sharp horses by sires such as AP Indy. Is it possible that a member of this family can produce a mile and a quarter horse by Uncle Mo, you know, who was an extremely top-class two-year-old, and, you know, had issues at three, tried to come back, wasn't quite the same, obviously, but subsequently he's become an incredible stallion. So you can't discount them, Steve, but in this particular case, compound the problem, I think, for Uncle Chuck. He's from Forest Music, a specialist sprinter by Unbridled Song. You know, I mean, she was she made her money sprinting. She won the Miss Preakness Stakes at 6 furlongs. She was G1 placed twice in two Saratoga Sprint, two New York Sprints, and tests in the prior race. And her most accomplished foal before Uncle Chuck was Kentuckian, a son of Tis Now, who also was kind of closer to that speed wing than he was stamina, even though Tis Now obviously won the Breeders' Cup Classic twice. Kentuckian, the Tis Now colt I'm talking about, won the Laz Barrero and was third in the Los Al Derby. Going back in the family, the second dam, Defer West, you know, she was a sprinter, set a track record for the 7 furlongs. You know, so it's an early maturing family. You go back further, Steve, it's a Phipps family, and Mining, you might remember that colt by Mr. Prospector. I think he won like 6 out of 7 starts. He was a sprinter as well for the Phippses. It's known for sprinters, and Uncle Mo would have to, he's already got the Los Al Derby winner from this horse, but over a speedier track. I think combined with the horse's inexperience, but more importantly, that track I pointed out to you, coming from a fast track like that, Saratoga, you're going to have to bring some extra stamina, I think, and I think this horse will take a lot of money on the Baffert and the Uncle Mo and the undefeated record so far and a potential superstar. And I think he's probably a horse that I would bet against.
You know, interesting.
I've been burned before betting against Baffert. But that's my take on him.
Let's take the Uncle Mo portion of the equation and fold in this Caracero. This is the Gustavo Delgado runner. This one, though, is an Uncle Mo, in fact, bred by SF, Bloodstock, but out of a Warfront mare, Peacetime. Juxtapose this Uncle Mo and what that mare brings to the party versus the Unbridled Song and the very nice Unbridled Song, mare when we talk about Forest Music.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there's some similarities in both of them, and Phipps plays a part. This family of what's his name?
Caro. C-A-R-A-C-A-R-O.
Caro. Yeah.
Yes.
Caro. This particular Uncle Mo comes also from the Phipps family. Highest regard is from the family, you know, going back. But it's also known for its speedier representatives. I mean, you'll remember this from the 90s, the Philly Culture Vulture that came here for the Breeders' Cup and stuff. She was a champion 2-year-old and a, you know, kind of a mild champion in Europe. She won the French Guineas, and she, you know, she stayed probably 9 furlongs. But she was a speedy representative of this family as well. The other, and this is under the fourth dam, but coming closer to the pedigree, the third dam is by Stormcat. And the second dam is by Unbridled. So you have in this family again, Unbridled through himself. And the other Uncle Mo, you had Unbridled Song, a son of Unbridled. And of course, as you pointed out, the dam is Warfront. You know, I looked up all the Uncle Mo stakes winners before I got on here today that had Unbridled and Danzig in their pedigrees, meaning Warfront by Danzig and Unbridled. And would you believe that not one of them, and not that there's a lot of opportunity for it, but not one of them had won at 10 furlongs. And Mo Town, who was out of a Bernardini mare and had a head Unbridled in the pedigree. Let me just bring his pedigree up just to double check. He won at 9 furlongs. And he won on the turf, too. But it's interesting. No, he had Danzig in the pedigree, so he was one of the ones with Danzig I was looking up. But it's interesting, Steve, because I probably like this one a little better for the trip, especially with his racing record. But the horse that, and Caracaro the last time out ran a pretty good race when he, when he stretched out and was second only in neck back of Country Grammar in the Peter Pan. The horse that I think fits this race on pedigree is Country Grammar. He's by Toneless, Tappet's son, obviously Belmont Stakes winner. Bred on that, he's out of Forestry Mare, which is that great Tappet Stormcat cross. And, you know, he's a horse that is by a stallion. He's a big stallion, Toneless, stands at Land's End. And he's the type of horse that you expected his three-year-olds to really come to hand at around this time of year. So if you're looking for a pedigree angle for this, and of course, all of this is exclusive of Barclay's horse, Tis the Law, who's also from the Tappet line. I think on pedigree, Country Grammar comes closest to a horse that fits and sways at 1.25 miles.
Interesting that you went in that direction. Because I was curious about what the Forestry Mare, what that meant in terms of, you know, doing any, I don't know, any truncating of you know, what Tonalist brings to the party.
Yeah,
in terms
of Tonalist is a horse that has a, you know, very stamina-oriented pedigree in the sense that he's out of a Pleasant Colony mare. And in any type of pedigree, Steve, you need a blend of speed and stamina for a mile and a quarter. You can't just have all stamina. So you need some of this forestry in you, you know? And it's kind of similar to getting back to Uncle Mo when we were talking about some of the elements of his pedigree. You'll notice that his Derby winner, Nyquist, is out of a forestry mare.
Well, Country Grammar, this is what, start number six, and broke the maiden in the second start, going a mile and an eighth, and that certainly is a indicator, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then he was, of course, shortened up and went again. What was his next? I don't have it here. He went a mile and a 16th and shortened up twice.
The Fountain, yeah, the Fountain of Youth.
And won again. So it's two wins at a mile and an eighth.
That's true. And when you say that, I'm going to let's do an aside for a second, because going to Del Mar on Saturday and Thousand Words kind of resurrecting his prospects, his classic hopes, with that effort, and simultaneously there was the cutback from a mile and an eighth going on for Honor AP. And you know, for those that, and I said on Monday, you know, don't abandon you know, your interests if you're an Honor AP fan.
Yeah,
right, because it doesn't mean anything. He was getting untracked at the wire at a mile and a 16th. The next 16th of a mile would have had him, you know, most likely passing Thousand Words, and you know, then we're going to add another eighth of a mile. So there's another 330 yards to negotiate for an Honor AP. And so for people that are trying to differentiate, you wouldn't think that there's such a difference at a mile and a 16th to the mile and the eighth. But it, in a lot of ways, it's the dividing mark. It's the line of demarcation, you know, between a horse that can stay and a horse that is a middle distance runner.
Yeah, that's right. Because in this country, we really have this narrow band of racing between 7 to 9 furlongs, and there is that demarcation, as you point out, a mile and a 16th going to a mile and an eighth. I mean, if you look at a stallion like Into Mischief, for example, he's a fantastic stallion, great stallion, and the next stage for him is to break through to that mile and an eighth, and then perhaps even above to a classic down the road, but he really hits it up to a mile and a 16th.
Well, he was,
you know, you don't see an Into Mischief frequently in a mile and a quarter race, even though he's a terrific stallion.
Yep. Is he in some ways, Sid, is he kind of this generation's Stormcat in that regard?
Very good. Very good. Yes, he is. Very good analogy, I think, yeah. Except the Stormcats were from a prior era, and they stayed a mile and an eighth. But, you know, vis-a-vis the comparison, yeah, that's true. That is true. He just keeps getting top horse after top horse every weekend. It seems like,
yeah,
you know, he's got a graded stakes winner, right? But when you sit down and actually count the number of grade one winners he has, I believe it's at six right now.
Well, and
that's because the grade ones tend to be more grade ones tend to be two turn grade ones, you know.
I'm looking at who else is involved here Saturday from the stallion side. Chivalry, Awesome, of course, out of an Aniseed mare, and this is classic Jacks or better, Fred Bry. You've got South Bend, the High Clare product that up until recently was Sagamore and just changed hands in the Horace sale. This is an Algorithms out of an old Trieste bear. There's a
inbred 3x3 to AP Indy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and he also, you know, when it comes to fitness and it comes to some bottom, I mean, here's a horse between February 1st, Sid, and May 23rd, ran in five turf routes. You would think he's absolutely, and then Mott has had him, Mott's had him now for, when was the sale? The sale, was it 6 weeks ago, give or take?
Yeah, so Mott had him for a few weeks, but they bought him to run in this race, kind of.
Yes.
So, you know, it's, I don't know that it was Mott, you know, Mott's getting a new horse in, with the instructions we're buying him for this race.
Well, and that's a heady ownership group of Peter Deutsch, Gary Barber, Adam Wachtel, and Pantefel. So.
Yeah, and they probably, you know, slice and dice this thing on figures and pedigree analysis and everything. And, you know, they're not guys that would go into a gunfight empty-handed. And they probably think this horse really stays and, you know, let's take a shot here to perhaps, you know, see where we belong for the Derby.
Well, and of course, he, you know, we do have another, I should mention, we do have another, and the final, Derby future, and I would think, today's Wednesday, I would think that that's going to be dropped today, and South Bend, last seen, just missing to Dean Martini in the Ohio Derby, and of course, Dean Martini is going to run Sunday in the Ellis Park Derby, and the future wager will close that race. Actually, I think is being run after the what did Marty McGee address this I think yesterday, and I think the Ellis Park race is going to be run after the future wager closes, and I want to confirm that, because Marty addressed that let me see. Yes, the Ellis Park Derby on Sunday will run after the future wager pool closes at 6 o'clock on Sunday, FYI. But you'll get South Bend's effort. I mean, it's a mile and a quarter versus what they're going to run at Ellis, but you will get a little bit of a referendum on Dean Martini, who seems to be okay.
Yeah, and South Bend is a horse, by the way, we were talking about trying to mix some speed with stamina. If I had to really analyze South Bend's pedigree, I would say it leans towards being heavy on stamina. In other words, we talked about the 3x3, right, to AP Indy, and that's pretty stamina oriented, but South Bend's second dam is also by Virginia Kraft Payson's Irish Derby winner San Jovi. And you know, it's a family that has produced some good horses, including the Philly Fault G1 winner. Won the Santa Margarita. She's from this family. So, you know, it's a family that can get you some distance on the bottom as well.
All right, let's flesh out the rest of this field. Max Player, Sid, and this obviously a win here would be enormous, obviously, for Honor Code, and out of the Not For Love mare, Fools in Love, bred by K&G, and you know, he's done little wrong. There was nothing wrong with his effort in the Belmont.
No, and you know, again, like Honor AP, he's by Honor Code, son of AP Indy. You know, this is an AP Indy Mr. Prospect across. It's a classic cross. You know, with some of these horses, we're talking Tonalist, we're talking Constitution for Tis the Law, Tonalist for Country Grammar, and now Max Player and Honor AP, which you mentioned, by Honor Code. These are all first crop sires. So we don't know what their records are going to look like. However, you and I have talked over and over again about how these first crop horses tend to get some of their best mares in the first years, and that's why there's so many that become prospects right away. And, you know, this happened with Uncle Mo with his first crop getting Nyquist. Got that Derby winner right away. So at this point, Steve, it's, you know, when you're analyzing sires and stuff, you know, you have a very limited amount of information to base anything on. And it may turn out that Honor Code, the last really big son of AP Indy, he may become a stallion like his sire and become noted for stamina. So far, he's got these very two promising colts in the classic trail. However, there's some inconsistencies with both, and we'll need to see more before we can, and others too, we'll need to see a bigger sample size and a bigger resume, several crops before we can really analyze it. But, you know, he's certainly got the right to do it. And I don't know if we mentioned the rest of his pedigree, but he's, you mentioned he's out of a Not For Love mare. That mare also produced a very good colt in Europe, Seahenge by Scat Daddy. This colt was a, you know, good two-year-old. G1 placed at two. Not a staying type. And in the second dam, my French deputy, she produced International Star, who was at Foupeg Colt, that
right.
was the Louisiana Derby.
Right.
So, you know, puts him in the picture, certainly, if he wasn't already exposed form-wise.
Well, and the thing about him, you know, that performance, he was running late in the Belmont, and that was off of an extended layoff. I mean, we had last seen him in the Withers. So we're talking,
right.
March, April, yeah. May, June. He was off 110 days, probably.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. And he, you know, you can't knock him off that. I mean, that's only going to tighten him and mm-hmm. get him even ready, more prepared for this race. So he's certainly a horse that you've got to use.
He's a consideration, and that leaves us with the late addition, the maiden winner, First Line, and First Samurai. You know, and by the way, the First Samurai, he comes up on semi-regularly basis. He has really proven to be a very useful sire, Sid, and in our, it was certainly exciting to be around when First Samurai, you know, when he burst on the scene at Saratoga and in the Hopeful, Lansden Robbins and partner Bruce Lunsford, and you know, he's kind of Claiborne's Midnight Lute.
Yes, a very good example of that, you know. And of course, Claiborne had a really good colt by him, Lee, that they stand. His first crop is running this year too. But you're absolutely right. He's the type of horse that I used to call the you know, owner breeder's friend. You know, they're not necessarily the flashy commercial horses, but if you want to beat the race, you know, he stands for 15,000, similar to Midnight Loot, as you pointed out, and he just keeps getting horses that run. They run a variety of distances, but they stay, they sprint. You know, as you pointed out, he really had his best year at two when he won the Champagne. But, you know, he's the type of horse that gets a very, very high percentage of runners to foals. So that means they're really sound horses. They win. You know, I used to have this thing, Steve, when we analyzed horses where we had these certain barometers. We used to call them 80, 60 sires. And those were horses that got 80% runners from foals, which tells you that, wow, this is, you know, they're sound. They get to the track. And 60% winners from foals, which means that not only do they get to the track, but they win. And he's that type of horse. And so as a sire, you got to respect that. On form, of course, you're talking about this colt, first line? You know, he's just a maiden winner. He comes from a good family further back, imagining the dam of Serena's song. I think his third or fourth, this first line's first colt, first line's third dam, I think, is a sister to Serena's song, Serena's sister. And, you know, it's a line that hasn't done much lately. I think it was the line Serena's sister had a good graded stakes winner by Rock Hard 10 called Doubles Partner. It's a line that isn't going to give you a lot of stamina. You know, mile and an eighth may be the wheelhouse of this horse. But again, you know, form-wise, he's got a lot to find versus some of these more accomplished horses in the race.
Well, to his credit, we should note, and I was speculating aloud earlier in breaking his maiden. I'd forgotten what the distance was, but I just looked, and it was 9 furlongs on the stretch out. So he breaks through, and 85 buyer in that win, and of course that came on July 29th. So you know you're looking at a 2 week turnaround, but there's nothing wrong with that. This might be a horse that benefited from the 9 furlongs, and then you just wonder what that 10th is going to mean, you know, to him. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be the longest shot on this board. Who wrote him? Jose Ortiz wrote him. So there it is.
On this board, but you know, again, it's Barkley Tag's called Tis the Law. You know, he's got a great. We've talked about it many times, but he's got a great combination of speed and stamina in his pedigree. He's been brought along right. It's obviously, you know, he's obviously heavy favorite in the race. And he'll use this to go to the Derby. There's a lot riding on it for him. And by all rights, I mean, you know, we'd expect him to win.
Well, he's going to face a couple of horses that'll certainly challenge. I'm not surprised per se to hear what you said about Uncle Chuck. I think what he's got going for them, Sid, is the breadth of him. I mean, he's just, you know, he's literally going to be taking one jump to Tis the Law's two. So
physically, you've got two major contrasts right
yes.
there. A smaller, compact, muscular colt against a massive Uncle Mo. So that's going to be an interesting juxtaposition as well.
Uncle Chuck, Tis the Law, Chivalry, South Bend, Max Player, Caracaro, Country Grammar, and First Line. I guess we didn't really talk about Chivalry. We certainly respect what Fred Bry produces. Jacks are better.
And that mare, by the way, has produced a bunch of stakes winners, including a full sibling to Chivalry, who's a miler. Note the broodmare sire, Hannah Sheed, son of AP Indy, is also the broodmare sire of Maximum Security.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of some of those kinds of things, it was win-win-win that I couldn't think of when it came to hat trick. Yes, that was the hat trick. That was Mrs. Weber's hat trick.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Well said. You're going to pick your man Barkley, I take it. You're no matter where they draw.
Well,
not that not that the draw means anything.
I happen to like the horse, and I'll pick him, and I'll, I'm planning on, using, I'm going to bet, like $100 exact him
there
over Country Grammar.
All right. There it is, Sid. Sid's, you're getting a rare opportunity to work into mile and a quarter form for Derby next month, and we're still waiting for news. Watching Darren Rogers' feed at Derby Media for some decisions about the jockey quarantine situation, which. I don't know if you heard Baffert with me yesterday, but I thought Baffert had a very practical application with this, to have them, come in right on top of it and produce a test that indicates that they're clear, have them come in on Thursday night and have them, wrapped in bubble wrap, keep them all separate and... blow through the 2 days and goodbye, and away they go. It seems like an arduous scenario to bring them in, 10 days or before that and miss chunks of the Saratoga and Del Mar meet. I think it puts the jocks and their agents and the horsemen on both coasts in a terrible position.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to keep them in a bubble, bringing them, in that day, like you just said. I've seen this in other sports. The real issue for me with the thing is if you have a bigger crowd and a crowd that's not sensitive to following protocols, that's to me a bigger danger than it is honestly with the professionals that are involved.
If the jocks are there 10 days before, what are they supposed to do? They're supposed to stay in a hotel room and have room service, even room service. How is that not even any contact with people during that fortnight is risky. I don't know. It's I'm sure they're weighing everything.
If I were the athlete, I'd want to just come in, boom, get the test, do the ride, and then get out. That's what I'd want to do. I think the longer they stay, are they allowed to ride again over there or not?
That's a great point as well. On Sunday, Saturday night after Derby, do you fly out and run home to San Diego and New York? How is anybody?
New York, they got 2 weeks here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a mess on that front. And, think about what's going to go on. Think about what is going to go on between now and Breeders' Cup. If this is going to be the execution, because you've got, you also have Kentucky Downs over a 9-10 day period, six or five race cards. You got to go to Baltimore. The first week in October, and then you've got Breeders' Cup. These are all handfuls of days. How are you going to with specialty mounts? I who's been shockingly silent on this topic is the Guild. Shouldn't Terry Meeks be taking an active position in all this?
Yeah, it's definitely creating a lot of havoc for these guys. I know personally, Chuck Tripke's got Cheryl Spite that's going to be racing on Derby Day. Roger can't come. Roger Atfield can't come.
Right.
So they're going to send the horse with the jockey, you know, in this two-week period, and he's going to stay for the 2 weeks to ride. So, you know, it's created a lot of, and he's not a big-name jockey, and he's not going to, you know, but you can just imagine the logistics for people and how they're going to have to work around it.
And so you're hearing then that the decision is to go in the American turf.
What for who?
With Cheryl Spite. He's looking at the
Cheryl Spite. If I were a betting man, he's going in the Kentucky Derby. If there's less than 20 and there's no point systems.
Really?
Oh yeah, Chuck wants to go in the Derby.
I assumed. I was thinking the old Crown. I don't know. God knows what liquor it is right now.
You know, yeah, right.
The old Spittoon.
No, the horse is nominated for the Pathé Mile and the Derby.
So he's not even looking at the American turf at the 3-year-old turf race.
No, he's looking at the dirt
or the Pathé. Okay,
yeah.
All right. We'd love. Listen, Chuck. Chuck and Brad Kelly, they're not afraid to enter.
Chuck's going to actually be there. So.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
You know, that actually, a Calumet-Fipke match race, they both could assemble, you know, about four horses from each camp, and they could have their own little league of racing. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'd love it.
Yeah.
Well, that I thank you for that too, Sid. What a way to wrap up. We covered a lot of bases, and as always, we want to thank Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, Work Thoroughbred Consultants, of course, and we're at an interesting juncture, hitting August, no yearling sales to talk about until September, but 510-490-1111 to work with Sid and the team. And broodmare compatibility analysis, and you've got a whole season full of. At this point, you've got all your babies have got some months on them, and you can get a good feel for what your mare's produced and what you might want to be doing and thinking about for February next year, because we're really not that far off. So,
no, we'll start doing some matings in this month now.
Nice. Well, yeah. Get together with Sid, and of course
right,
you should be.
Again, Steve,
Sid, this was
that.
Great. Thank you. Sid
right.
Fernando,
bye-bye.
Everybody. We'll take the break right here, and we've got the draw coming up at Travers. Andy Serling presiding, and Andy did tell me later in the afternoon they are having Bob via Zoom, so he'll be chipping in along with probably Chad Brown and Barkley Tag and maybe Linda. So that's at the Naira Facebook page. So I'll pull that up while we take this break. Matt Hegarty is going to join us. If you did not get a chance the other day, over the weekend, if you didn't get a chance to read Matt's piece, which followed up the interesting Del Mar pick six ticket that we talked about with Jay Pribman, Matt followed it up with a really good piece about the computer wagering, the computer groups, the CAW teams, etc. And we're going to talk to Matt about it next, and keep an eye on the Travers draw as well. Back after this, Hour 3 at the Races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Learn the business Congress of Horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Ah, Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the meet and two special Thursdays featuring the Grade 1 AP Smithick on July 23rd and the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup on August 20th. Savor the thrill of horses flying over fences. Steeplechase racing, it's a Saratoga tradition.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back at the races, hour three, and I don't see where the, I'm trying to watch the, for the draw feed, and I don't see it, so I'll keep poking around here. There it goes. Okay, the post position draw will begin shortly. You can get it at the right of the NYRA website. Click the upper right hand corner where it says watch live, like when you watch the feed, you know, during the race days, it should pop up there. Meanwhile, popping up with us right now, Matt Hegarty, and it always good to check in with Matt when there's hard business issues that are either vexing or infuriating or, you know, just plain hard news. And